The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, and you're going to regret, because I'm the best as ever been." "Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell's broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul." The devil opened up his case and he said, "I'll start this show," and fire flew from his fingertips as he rosined up his bow. And he pulled the bow across the strings and it made an evil hiss. And then a band of demons joined in and it sounded something like this. Finished, Johnny said, "Well, you're pretty good, old son, but sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done. Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny, there's your dog back, no child, no." The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat, and he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, "Devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. I done told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best as ever been." He played, "Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. The chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny, where you don't fight, no child, no."
There are moments in this life when things are meant to be. We sat here less than 2 minutes before airtime. The question never came up as to what we're going to open with. And I had one particular song, I couldn't think of the name of it, a Jackson Browne piece that I used for many, many years. And then all of a sudden it struck me. The devil. Charlie Daniels, "The Devil Went Down to Georgia." This is an amazingly appropriate piece to open with today. I need some upbeat things going on. Not that there's a hell of a lot of upbeat stuff going on around here. Good evening on this Monday night, 19th day of September. Jeffrey Bennett here, The Edge of Darkness. A few years ago, Writer Henry Lamb wrote something called Agenda 21. What is it? How did it get here? In that piece, he said that Agenda 21 is a set of policy recommendations designed to reorganize global society around the principles of environmental protection, social equity, and what is called sustainable economic development. At the heart of the concept of sustainable development, Lamb continues, is the assumption that government must manage society to ensure that human activity conforms to these principles. We might ask a question. Do the people that set up and ordain these plans then plan to live under the same standards they set up for the rest of us proles? dumb question, isn't it? Or you already know the answer. A recent article in The Blaze, which is an interesting publication. We don't always agree with it, but this time they get it right. And in The Blaze article, they noted that support for Agenda 21 did not come only from the United Nations. It also came from wealthy donors like billionaire George Soros, whose Open Society gave the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives a $2.1 million grant way back in 1997, all for the purpose to support its local Agenda 21 project. And the financing was used to promote the project in the United States. Now, if you folks are like me, you've got to kind of wonder how much of this pro-UN propaganda is promoted in those indoctrination centers that we mistakenly still call public schools in this country. I mean, I can recall over the years seeing quite a bit of pro-UN material in public schools. Believe me, that was a long time ago that I was in public schools. But I've got no reason to even dream that the volume of it has slowed down. A while back, we had a neighbor who was trying to sell his house so he could buy a place out in the bayou, retire, do a bit of fishing out there. So what would Agenda 21, if fully enacted in this country, mean for him? It would mean that he could kiss his retirement home out on the bayou goodbye. Because with Agenda 21 enacted fully, it would mean that he would be informed by some local commissar that he would be much better off living in a miniature apartment in the local ghetto with the rest of us proles. It's interesting seeing reference in this to miniature apartments. Oh, it's gotten even crazier. Out here in Arizona, they are now building miniature homes. And they're just jammed right up to each other like you can't believe. 200 and 300 and 400 of them. There's not 6 feet between the two buildings. Oh, in effect, they're apartments, but they're designed to look like homes. They're all individual, you know. But what about my friend with his pickup truck? I mean, because that's where he would be heading out with his pickup. But he wouldn't need it because he won't be able to go much of any place beyond the bounds of the local ghetto. His guns? You can forget that, Charlie. The only ones needing guns in the ghetto would be the crooks because the feds have no interest in disarming them. And under Agenda 21, the entire country would be on one big gun-free zone because the United Nations just hates even the concept of privately owned firearms. As for fishing, don't even kid yourself. Why would you fish? In the street gutters in the ghetto after a toad strangler? If you did happen to have property out in the bayou before all this happened, well, that would have been given to some UN or federal apache as his reward for keeping ordinary folks away from it, making sure that they remain in their ghettos like good little proles. Can you begin to see the rosy future the United Nations has planned for us all? How we will fit into their scheme for economic sustainability? Of course, just another 10 days or so, it'll be October. We'll be dutifully reminded that by our prostitute press that October is United Nations Month, and that we should begin thinking about how our country will find its close place in a global government. I get a better idea. Not that I believe it's going to make any difference, but how about we all sit down, take some time to write to our Congress critters and tell them to sponsor or enact legislation that will get this country out of the United Nations and, more importantly, get them out of this country. Because, frankly, with friends like the United Nations, Do we really need enemies? Thank you, Al Benson Jr. Al's a man who's gotten older, not always in the best of health. He and his wife have certainly been around for a good number of years. They're living in a retirement home in northern Louisiana. But it's a retirement home for those who are ill and need care. I told you I thought that Al had died last July, a year ago July. And all of a sudden I started getting stuff from him again. He writes pieces like this. He does a lot on education-based stuff, on historical stuff. He was a editor-publisher of the Copperhead Chronicle. It was a quarterly newsletter that presented history from a pro-Southern and Christian perspective. He's published a lot of stuff with Kettle Moraine Publications, The National Educator, Free Magnolia, Southern Patriot. Guy's been around, still a member of the Confederate Society of America, Sons of the Confederate Veterans. In the past, has been a member of the John Birch Society. I become concerned that in time we're going to lose people like this. But I also believe the time is coming that I'll be lost. Not that soon, okay? I have more battles to fight. Different subject. This fiasco that we're watching unfold that we talked about last week with the getting all these illegals into the country and busing them up to areas that are politically the opposite ends of the country they're coming into. There's yelling and screaming. There's lawsuits going back and forth. Actually, one of the people that was moved up to the Northeast somewhere apparently died over the weekend. I'm sure her family will now sue because the only reason she died is because, you know, she got booted out of Texas or Florida and got moved up to wherever. Too bad it wasn't Kamala Harris. Never mind. But amongst that, one of the things we begin to find is that we're facing Democrats in disarray in this country, which is nothing new, but the level of frustrations between Biden and his own officials at the Department of Homeland Security are beginning to hit new highs over his refusal to act on the crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border. Now, don't misunderstand. Not every illegal coming across is Mexican. They're coming in from Venezuela. They're coming in from many other countries. Of course, the revelation comes that I just share with you, of all places, believe it or not, NBC News. And they were reporting over the weekend on conversations with nameless officials who are growing tired of the Biden administration's nothing-to-see-here attitude toward the ever-worsening illegal immigration crisis stemming from the unsecured southern border. You see, evidently, after the White House hosted a series of high-level meetings on immigration, which allowed Biden's DHS officials to present options, including flying migrants to the country's northern border with Canada. What? Wait. We would fly these migrants up to our northern border so they'd be right on the edge of Canada? Why would they cross the border into Canada? But then there's some DHS officials who've openly expressed frustration at meetings of this type. And that frustration stems from, according to these officials and international communications, The White House's reluctance to take a page from the book of Republican governments or governors and begin transforming migrants to cities within the U.S.
How about that, huh?
Of course, the same action has been called racist compared to Nazi tactics on MSNBC's air is actually what Biden's own administration is urging the president to do. So, Department of Homeland Security, with personnel already stretched beyond the breaking point and unable to do the actual work of securing the homeland southern border, is again ringing the alarm bells at the White House because the number of migrants crossing the U.S.-Mexican border is nearing 8,000 a day. That's coming from NBC News. My God, they're actually waking up to the reality. And not only is this an insane amount of illegal invaders pouring into this country, but the White House officials have previously set 9,000 per day as an internal trigger to begin what they refer to as interior processing, where migrants would be flown or bused from the border to interior cities. Oh, I see. So the Biden administration had already talked about plans to do what is now, it's now attacking Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott for doing. Of course. Well, according to the interview and documents that NBC News report is based on, the Biden administration is currently in the midst of botching yet another piece of its response to the border crisis, wherein it's been stated that DHS officials have advocated that the administration should start securing planes and planning for interior processing now, according to the documents obtained by NBC News. You see, Homeland Security officials have apparently expressed frustration among themselves that Republicans are sending migrants to cities in an effort to sow chaos and shape the national conversation on immigration, while the White House officials have stalled DHS initiatives to send migrants to cities inside the country in a more organized manner. That according to the internal communications. So you see, all this chaos at the border and behind the scenes at the White House is taking place at the same time that Democrat media surrogates are wasting their breath and mainstream media airtime to attack Republicans for doing more or less what the DHS wanted to do all along. Of course, at the same time, the Biden administration, from Karine Jean-Pierre to Joe Biden to Kamala Harris and Alejandro Mayorkas, have been insisting that border is secure, that there's no crisis, that everything is running smoothly. You know, perhaps the most damning indictment of the White House's latest mucking up of the border crisis is the fact that the White House did not even bother trying to respond to the NBC News request for comment on their damn report. Oh, my God, people, this has just become insane. Let me expand on this topic just a little bit. Only in the twisted minds of opportunistic political zombies is busing 50 migrants to Texas to Ritzy Martha's Vineyard grotesque, inhumane, and kidnapping, and literally human trafficking, as Hillary Clinton put it. She said, "I happen to believe still the majority of Americans are good-hearted and generous, and when people end up on their doorstep in need, they're going to respond." That's what Clinton actually said to Joe Scarborough. Called Governor DeSantis' move inhumane, terrible treatment of human beings. There, Americans going to feed them and house them, and the kids in the AP Spanish class will be let out of high school so they can go and translate, she said. Of course, then Senator Elizabeth Warren tweeted that exploiting vulnerable people for political stunts is repulsive and cruel, which is exactly what these Democratic bastards do 365 days a year. Oh, hello there. There's a lawyer that was on the television show The View recently. Her name is Sunny Hostin. Said that seeking asylum is legal in the United States, that it's your right to do it when you get here. That is, you know, Whoopi Goldberg's comment, because she compared illegals breaching the Mexican border to people who come through the border from Canada. I love Canadians, don't get me wrong, Goldberg said. My point is, because it's been made into a brown people issue, it's a problem. Why is it people of color always have to turn it into a colored issue? So in the minds of these liberals and Democrats, the border issue has already reached a point of no return, right? Long time ago. In the face of the epidemic fentanyl deaths, vaccine injuries reaching into the tens of thousands, inflation skyrocketing, violent crime off the charts, mobs threatening Supreme Court judges, and is more than 2 million illegals and counting stream across our border? Liberals and leftists screamed the loudest last week about 50 migrants desecrating Martha's Vineyard. Of course, these demon craps have not always been so reckless. Not too long ago, illegal immigration was a damn no-brainer. Up Chucky Schumer said in 2009, illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple. Hillary belched back in '03, I am adamantly against illegal immigration. And of course, in 1995, Billy Bob Clinton himself promised, as president, to speed the deportation, the deportation of illegal aliens who are arrested for crimes, to better identify illegal aliens in the workplace. We are a nation of immigrants. We are also a nation of laws. Yeah, well, speedy deportations or deportations were part of the recommendations that the U.S. Commission on Immigration Reform, which, by the way, was chaired by a marvelous woman, Congressman Barbara Jordan. And she gave those reforms to Clinton that very same year. Barbara Jordan said the issue of immigration is not a partisan issue. At the United We Stand America National Convention in 1995, she said that immigration is not a right. It is a privilege granted by the people of the United States to those we choose to admit. And after massive research and investigations, Jordan's team found it vital to the nation's interest not only to restrict illegal, but legal immigration. And she said, we must control illegal immigration before it erodes legal immigration. The commission defines credibility in immigration policy by a simple yardstick. Those who should get in. Those who should be kept out are kept out. And those who should not be here would be required to leave. For our immigration policy to make sense, it is necessary to make distinctions between those who obey the law and those who violate it. Unlawful immigration is not acceptable. Today, my friends, illegal immigration has not only become accepted, but has become institutionalized. Seeing a rich liberal enclave like Martha's Vineyard summon the National Guard and kicked out the 50 migrants in a little more than a day, that was quite a marvel to behold and rare. Well, good for them, but the poor and middle class who live in woke democratic cities aren't so damn fortunate. They have to suffer. They got to move. There are people who, as an example, lived in L.A. for many years. They saw a point of no return for that city in 2019. Gal texted videos of illegals camped outside of her apartment. Shocking. Clusters of illegals lined the streets, camped on blankets that formed the property lines for slipshod sidewalk storefronts. Shopping carts wrapped in aluminum foil to grill, to sell food. One guy heaps stacks of crawdads inside a baby carriage without ice or refrigeration. Another one sold piles of chili peppers sprawled on the bare sidewalk under a rickety table. And Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti ordered police to do nothing. These people are above the law. How can you sell so much food on the street without a permit, without the grading system? I didn't know you could have a business and not pay taxes. This is their country. The situation in Los Angeles has become unbearable. And so this young lady moved to Texas. And those who choose to live in the city scream into political oblivion against illegal immigration. Their voices are heard loud and clear and then ignored. How about one black guy wearing a MAGA hat? Told county leaders back in 2017 in a meeting to consider SB 54, California's sanctuary state bill, that things had become so unbearable then that he's ready to take the law into his own hands. SB 54 eventually passed, went into effect in 2018, forbade local and state law enforcement to cooperate with federal immigration authorities. Make California great again, the man yelled at the meeting. We gonna handle this. If you guys don't, I will. And if Trump would have lost, I would have organized some brothers, and we would put all your asses under citizen's arrest. Pointing to a group of pro-illegal immigrant protesters, of course. And now, unlike Martha's Vineyard, no one with power to affect change at the time spoke for frustrated Americans except for Trump. And even the country's chief law enforcer, Trump, was viciously opposed by Democrat and leftist politicians who exerted their full powers into doing nothing. They didn't want to stop illegals. They wanted to stop Trump. The more illegals they bring in, the more votes the Democrats seem to get. Well, then Trump took the drastic step of threatening tariffs, forcing Mexico to agree, among other things, to send 6,000 of its National Guard troops to the Guatemalan border to curb the flow of the illegal entry. And then he also asked Mexico to disrupt migrant bus routes and designate itself a third safe country so asylum seekers' journeys could end there, and it worked. Until Joe Biden and the demon craps out of political hatred dismantled it all with nothing to replace it with. And so with the deliberate blurring of the lines between legal and illegal immigration, the erosion of bipartisan political will to enforce the law, millions of illegals fanned out into communities in every state. It's going to take a lot more than two Republican governors pulling political stunts to put that genie back in the bottle. I mean, how about the mayor of Chicago? Some illegals get bussed into Chicago. Instead of leaving them in that Democratic city, she loads them on buses and sends them into very wealthy Republican communities. I've never seen such game playing in politics in my entire life, my friends. I mean, along with defunding the police, and so many crazy things, without drastic, unapologetic pushback before the midterm elections and beyond, it's hard not to agree with Thomas Sowell, who told Mark Levin in 2020 that America could reach a point of no return. But Sowell said, I hope, of course, that that'll never happen. That there is such a thing as a point of no return. The Roman Empire overcame many problems in its long history. But eventually it reached a point where it simply could no longer continue on. And much of that was from within. Not just from the barbarians attacking from outside. This frickin' dog of mine, I'm getting ready to go and kill that frickin' dog. Yeah, let's do a quick one because I'm going to go kill that freaking dog of mine. Be right back, folks.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries
eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at susannasecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S, secret.com.
Used to be Andy and Barney Fife. Now a tired Stern and a brothel life. Too much crap drive the world insane. Everybody singing the jailhouse blues. Don't believe a word of the evening news. Truth stood for years down the drain. Trailer parks with a building cold. Cul-de-sacs from the country blow. High-tech bars with bad karaoke sounds. Uncle Sam keeps your money spent. Pay your tithes, you can't pay your rent. Foreign car selling big in American town. What happened? Does anybody know? What happened? Where did America go? Everything Walmart all the time. No more mama, papa, five and dime. What happened? Where did America go? Where did America go? How did we ever go so wrong? Did we get too high? Did we sleep too long? Why did we raise the price of gasoline? I remember the morning the towers fell. I fell back asleep and dreamed of hell. I guess I thought it all was part of my dream. What happened? Does anybody know? What happened? Where did America go? Everything Walmart all the time. No more mom and pop, five and dime. What happened? Where did America go? Where did America go? Where'd it go, boys? Tell me. Hey, Hag. I'm afraid she's gone. I miss America.
I miss America, too. I think most of us do. It's not the America that I remember. It's not the America that I grew up in. Maybe we were all deaf, dumb, and blind. Here we sit on the what is it, the end of the third week of October or September, I'm sorry. I look back just 19 days ago. This first day of September could very well have signaled the last day of meaningful political freedom in this country, my friends. As darkness fell on that day in Philadelphia, Joe Biden stood in front of Independence Hall, the site of our nation's founding, to deliver a screed that may lead to its ultimate undoing. Oh, certainly the content led to confusion among the White House image makers. The word merchants supplied a lofty title, claiming that the subject matter was the continued battle for the soul of the nation. But the so-called optics crew chose to bathe the national monument in blood-red floodlights. And behind the presidential podium was one Joe Biden, who was not there as the leader of a nation, but instead as the purveyor of political pornography. In less than 25 minutes, Joe Biden perverted our entire political process, adding new venom to his vitriol. Joey ensured his remarks would be historic by claiming that millions of everyday Americans who disagree with him politically should now be regarded as a threat to the nation? Well, I guess that stands for you and I. Every broadcaster at this network, every listener to this network, we must all be considered as a threat to the nation. And 3 minutes into his babbling, He barked out this central theme of his, that Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundation of our republic. God. Unless you think the criticism contained in this, what I'm sharing with you, is overwrought, understand this distinction, my friends. While extremism has been the left's favorite label for every Republican candidate and cause since Barry Goldwater, Joe Biden broke new ground by failing to separate citizens from his personal political opponents. And Joey just simply said Donald Trump has misled MAGA Republicans into following his extremism, blah, 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 blah. Biden could have been spared the rightful scorn he's now receiving. Interesting. He and his wife flew over to London for the services for Queen Elizabeth. They got over there, got off the plane, got in the car, went to the services, and promptly left and came back home. That's a damn shame. I frankly don't want them here. Understand some things, my friends. We all know that politics eat beanbag. That's the demonization of opposing candidates. And while lamentable, has been so commonplace for so long that it falls within the bounds of accepted political rhetoric. That's that polite word for the words BS. What is unacceptable is the demonization of all who disagree with them. Because absurdities abound in the aftermath. And so, the city of brotherly love, you know, the city where even the brothers don't love each other, became the backdrop for a declaration of political hate. Joey, who claimed in his inaugural address that he would be a uniter, instead revealed his desire to be a divider. And the man who serves as our current commander-in-chief believes that he's justified to name those who oppose him politically as domestic enemies. And undergirding all that was wrong with his presidential address was Biden's fundamental misunderstandings of the type of nation he leads, literally. And when he called this a republic once, he used the word democracy 26 times in a speech that ran just under 25 minutes. Oh, Joey is scarcely alone in his misuse and overuse of the word democracy. The fact that so many of us regard the term as synonymous with republic reflects the triumph of an earlier effort to change our political lexicon and, in so doing, alter our politics. You see, progressives of both parties deliberately began using the word democracy in the early 20th century, implying that majority rule was the guiding light in government. Benjamin Franklin, who was present at the creation of our government and an active participant at its founding, viewed democracy with distrust. And he stated that democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what to have for lunch. Now, friends, nowhere in our Constitution or the Bill of Rights will you find the word democracy. Instead, our founders referred to it as our republic, a government based upon the rule of law. In fact, the aforementioned Ben Franklin, when asked about the type of government our founders devised, offered this response: a republic, if you can keep it. My friends, Franklin was many things: a printer, an inventor, a diplomat, a statesman. And his above response sounds like a letter of prophecy from a founding father to his modern-day progeny. And so the question is published: can we keep our republic? Commentary by J.D. Hayworth. J.D. Hayworth spent several terms in office. Arizona representative in the United States House of Representatives. And one of the things that he sponsored had to do with this illegal immigration crap. And these Democrats continue to make damn sure that we just keep letting the enemy in. I met J.D. Hayworth twice. I may have shared this story with you. There was a time in the late 90s. I was in Virginia, Washington, D.C., doing some work for Gun Owners of America that I worked with very closely. And Larry Pratt, the then executive director, invited me to go to Fox News, where he was going to be a guest on one of the programs that evening. Could have been the Five, could have, I don't know whose program it was, doesn't matter. So I went along with him. We walked into the studio, and there was a man who I can visualize. Looked like a big, tall, big strapping man. Well-known broadcaster at the time and television commentator. And I can't remember his name, but he was there. And I was appalled at what a short, nothing little guy that he was. Looked nothing like what he looked like on television. But I met him. And then I was introduced to one J.D. Hayworth. Introduced myself. We talked for a few minutes. He at that point knew that I was from his home state. 2 weeks later, my wife and I grabbed our son. We were getting ready to head out. He had a hockey game that night over at one of the high schools off of Bell Road. And it was a gas station that we used to go to stop in and pick up drinks and snacks and stuff to take to the game. And I walked in the place to buy this stuff, and all of a sudden I heard this voice holler out, "Hey, Jeff, how you doing?" It's J.D. Hayworth. Last time I ever saw him. I'm very privileged to be publishing his work on Federal Observer. I need to go find him. He doesn't know I'm publishing it. So, we're living in a strange world, my friends. I've had a very angry day today for many, many reasons. I did not sleep well last night. 1 o'clock in the morning, I just said, enough of this. I'm hungry. I got up and I went out. I got something to eat. None of the regular people know it wasn't Denny's. I ain't going there anymore. None of the regular people that I know were working that night. They have at least one Fruit of the Loom working there every night now. They can't figure out which sex it is. But the food's good. The service is good. Blah, 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 blah. Came back home. Tried to go to sleep. Flip-flop, flip-flop, flip-flop. Finally went to sleep at I don't know what time. Woke up at 5:15 this morning because, oops, got to change the catheter. It's getting too full. Went back to bed, did not wake up for the alarm. And literally, almost from the moment I got up today, this whole day has been one of anger, frustration. Got a call from the hospital today wanting to review some of my records and indicate what it is I'm going to have to do. And wanted to know if I was scheduled for a blood test. I said, no, nobody said a thing about it. I said, you know, she said, well, you were supposed to have been here in August. This thing got canceled. She got it canceled a month. What do we do? Exciting, exciting. So, yeah, no, I won't kill the dog, but the dog just angers me because she's a whiner. Anyway, so it turns out I now have to go into the hospital tomorrow to go get a blood test. So that I have to go back. Well, she already apparently knows when my appointment is scheduled for a Wednesday, but won't tell me because that's up to my doctor's office to tell me. I thought, oh, Jesus, God, this is ridiculous. And the more I talked to her, the angrier I got. Not at her. The absolute frustration that there's things that should have been getting told to me by the frickin' doctor. And it isn't being done. By the time she and I finished talking for 30, 40 minutes, whatever, I calmed down. We had a side conversation. And it's fine. But the point is, I still got to go play the game. My plan is I will be here with you tomorrow, and then I will not be with you live for the rest of the week, although there is a remote possibility I might be able to stop in Friday night for a while, because, oh, I've already got something scheduled. That's right. What have we got? Come on, come on. Show me the sidebar, baby. I have to pop this thing open because I can't remember. We have another program scheduled for Friday night called Black Cat Whiskey Blues. So I hope you'll join us for that. Good selection of some tunes. More and more people are sending me notes that they're enjoying the Living Daylights of this blues stuff. So I hope you will too. Other things, suggest, take a look at Sierra Madre Precious Metals. I'm telling you more and more and more, pay a little attention to the spot gold and silver prices that you see on that site right now, because they're so far behind. They come from Kitco. But the problem is, they're based on what you and I call bid prices or wholesale prices. They're not the reality of what spot is from a buying standpoint. But there is something I'll share with you that I posted. It's an old piece that I've done in the past called The Buying Power of Gold. And I originally posted this on February 21st of 2020 when it asked the question, how's that dollar working out for you? Now, the figures I'm going to give you are down just a little bit right now, but it told a story about a 1978 where spot gold average was $193.22. February 21st of 2020, it was $1645. It's about $1670, almost $1680 right now. And a man tells a story about 1978 making $10 an hour installing air conditioning. Had a brand new truck, cost him $6,800. Rented a two-bedroom house for $300 a month. Gas was 60 cents a gallon. Food and insurance were cheap. And at the time of his writing, the same job paid $17 an hour. Truck was $40,000. House is $1,400 a month in rent. And food costs seven times more. How the people of this country can advance in life like this? The man's name was Mark Settler. My response, about living daylights is that, back here, says in 1978, it would have cost approximately 35.2 ounces of gold to purchase that truck. Today, it would only cost about 24 ounces, leaving you a surplus of over 11 ounces of gold in your possession, the net gain of over $18,000. Amazing stuff. But I'll tell you what, give me a second. Somebody's knocking on the door. It's a guy that's here doing some work, and I can't break away. He doesn't know what I do for a living. He doesn't know I'm on the air. Well, we could go do some off-the-wall, wacky piece of music and get me out of here, you know. But take a look at some of the other headlines over at Sierra Madre. Interesting piece, The Insanity of Biden's Amtrak Fiasco. Article written by a good friend of mine, Bill Gratchett, who's not been a guest on the program with me for many, many years. Some other headlines will keep you kind of rolling with it. So take a peek at it. I will be back here with you tomorrow. We'll see what happens come the end of the week. I don't know. Michael, find some music and plug it in here. I'm done talking today. Hey, I don't care if you play blues to close it out tonight. What's the difference? All right. I don't think that George Michael music is going to run us all the way, but you guys take care of yourself. Thanks for being with me tonight. Without apology for leaving early, I am Jeffrey Bennett. Do you think we have time? These are the days of the open hand. We will not be the last. Look around now. These are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past. Hand in hand.
vagrants and legitimate excuses. The rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure if we have too much, but we're taking our chances, say. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no hope to speak out. Dead skies above say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. Do-do-do. Do you think we have time? Do you think we have time? These are the days of the empty hand. Oh, we hold on to what you can. And charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year, yeah, yeah. This is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take my chances, say. I sang it 20 years and a day, 'cause nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love, Jesus has so much to hate. Hanging on to hope, there is no hope to speak out. And the wounded skies above say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.